Hey everybody, Dan here with a little apology slash clarification for y'all. I know in the intro to Monday's episode I promised that we were going to cover Alex's response to the news about Jeffrey Epstein's death on the Wednesday show, but you know what they say about plans, the best laid ones, mice, men, all that good stuff. We ran into a little bit of a barrier in terms of following through on that plan. I mentioned that on Saturday, Alex released a 2-minute video with his immediate response, which is actually just a 1 minute of him rambling in an airport with a ton of nervous-looking people behind him, and then 1 minute of commercials. It turns out that Alex was in that airport because he was going on vacation, and it turns out he's not going to be back until Friday, August 16th. He had Tom Papert, that boring guy who owns a station that still broadcasts Alex's show, he had him hosting on the Sunday show this week. And Alex called in to ride shotgun, as he likes to put it. The stuff about Epstein was very boring and predictable, it's just that the deep state killed him because they knew they couldn't use him to attack Trump, that sort of thing. But honestly, that wasn't most of what the episode covered. It seemed to me that Alex was far more interested in complaining about his vacation. According to Alex, he ran into some people in a pool who he decided were lawyers because they had what he describes as bike rider bodies. There's no real explanation about why having a bike rider body means that you're a lawyer, but somehow Alex is confident about his leap in logic. Anyway, these alleged lawyers harass Alex in this pool because the left is so evil that they can't even allow him to enjoy his vacation.
And then I'm here at the hotel, and five white yuppies, ruling class type, you know, they all had their bicyclist bodies. I'm not saying that's a bad body type to have, but they all had that trimmed, professional look. Well, it's time for war, man. So they're going to come up to somebody with their 11-year-old girl and say, "I hope you kill yourself." And the other woman says, "I want you to die," with their faces twisted in hate and the men's fist balled and breathing heavy. Just and, you know, I'm a man, but I know they're full of it. I learned about the left, so I started laughing at them, saying, "Hey, leave us alone. I don't want to hear it. Look what you're saying in front of a child. Oh, I noticed you left love to abort babies, so no wonder you want me to, you know, you love death." And then, oh, one of the women goes, "You're the one that killed those children in the shootings." I mean, it was incredible. This is the stuff that went on.
Now, leaving aside how this absolutely didn't happen, and leaving aside how badly Alex wants to be the victim in all these stories that he tells, and leaving aside how it's super suspicious that Alex goes on a week-long vacation right after doing a huge Save InfoWars money bomb, what I want to focus on is how the pool is the most dangerous place for Alex to be. We all know he was accosted by globalists in that hot tub a while back. He had some globalists mess with him while he was lounging in the hot springs at Barton Springs, I believe. Alex can't manage to get into the water without some minion of the New World Order ruining his good time. He should have learned his lesson. Stay out of the water, Alex. That's where the globalists come for you. Anyway, what I listened to, there wasn't an episode there to go over. And so today what I'm going to do, and I hope you'll enjoy, is I'm going to present to you a Wacky Wednesday episode that Jordan and I recorded before he took off for his vacation. Now I ask you this. Is it a conspiracy that Alex and Jordan went on vacation at the same time? It's definitely, probably, possibly a conspiracy, and please have a field day speculating about it. Since Alex has announced that he won't be back until Friday, I want to just let you all know that we're not going to have an episode on Friday this week due to just the difficulties of trying to pull it off and farm content to go over from, like, I don't know, he's probably going to have Robert Barnes hosting, have his lawyer host for the week. And I'm not in to listen to hours of Barnes talk. So we're just going to go ahead and take that day off. But we'll be back next week with coverage of everything that merits discussion. But I appreciate you all sticking around and having a good time. But for now, please enjoy this Wacky Wednesday adventure. And we will see you soon.
Knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Bray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
What up?
Dan!
What up?
Was there a band when you were in high school that was like the local cool band?
Yeah.
You know, like, did you ever go to those, like, open mics for bands, and there would be a bunch of two terrible bands, and then there'd be the one band that the local people all thought was great?
It's hard for me to say that about high school time, because I might have been a little disconnected. There might have been some, like, high school bands that I knew of that were cool, but I'm not entirely sure.
Mm.
But in, like, a little bit later, there was a band called Warhammer 48K. They were really awesome. They were like a really, I don't know if they were really, they were, everyone loved them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Cause they're that local band.
And I liked them as well.
Right.
But it was not my style of music. Mm-hmm. It was a little too loud generally and a little bit too aggressive. I was kind of like, I'm not so into this.
Right.
But all my buddies loved them. One of my buddies, his little brother, Cooper, was in the band. And, so like our friend group had a bit of an association. They had a lot of fans in my circle of friends, but some of the members of it became Cave.
Okay.
And they were the ones that ended up touring Europe and making some pretty great. I mean, it's good music. It's not my style.
You don't need to get defensive about it.
And I don't know. I think that Warhammer / Cave is probably the biggest example of those local bands. So anyway, this is a podcast where I know quite a bit about the Columbia local music scene. Not really. Don't know a ton. Don't know a ton. Was not involved.
Gotcha.
But I do know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about both.
Today it does not matter, Jordan.
Okay.
Because today we're doing—
That's good news.
We're doing something a little bit different. I decided to go into Project Camelot Land.
I'm loving it.
And I decided that we got a lot of weirdos that we pay attention to. Mm. And some of them have become great characters for us. Guy with telescope.
Of course. He's got a telescope.
He has a telescope.
Yeah.
We have Mark Richards. Anytime a Mark Richards episode comes up, we got top
of the list.
Guy who wants to storm the Getty Museum.
He's fun.
Stephen Kelly.
Is he ever going to?
These are like characters that we've become friends with over our time.
In a way.
And it becomes a sort of thing where it's difficult to listen to any episodes that don't involve them.
Right.
Because of, you know.
There's a letdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to hear about these other guys.
How's his telescope doing? Did he get a better telescope?
He needs a better.
He's
Bruce,
got it.
Bruce sees all. That's his name.
Bruce, that's right.
Yeah.
He's got a telescope.
He does.
And he sees all.
And there's one other guy, of course, Eddie Page, the racist Pleiadian. And so what I decided to do initially when I set out to make this episode was I wanted to check in on Eddie Page because last we heard of him, he had fallen out of Carrie Cassidy, the host of Project Camelot's good graces.
Right. He was a little too racist for her.
That certainly started it. And then accusations started to come out that he was passing off screenshots from video games his mothership.
Yep.
Which is a problem.
Yep. That's a bit of an issue.
So when he started to get called out, he took a turn for the dark. And I checked in on him, and he is now going by the name Archangel Abaddon.
That works.
He is now the bringer of death.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That's a big step up for him.
He has shaved his beard, and he looks very sinister now.
Okay.
I listened to a bunch of his videos because I thought, like, well, if he's now the angel of death, this has got to be amazing. They're a big letdown. He is very boring. He threatened to open the seventh seal on New Year's 2019. So we are now living in the aftermath of him opening the seventh seal.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he told us. You know, you think that's something that you wouldn't even know about.
He gave like 7 hours warning.
That's actually kind of proper of him.
Yeah.
That's polite.
So now he's leading a small cult based on the videos that I could tell. Where he's telling them that when the time comes, the aliens will come and take them away. Which
So are people actually... In his cult? Okay, never mind. Never mind. You're right.
These
You're right. Why
have
am I
like
asking
100
this?
Views.
I don't know why. Sometimes I ask you questions as though you have some sort of omniscience.
Let me tell you, there's no way for me to find out if anybody is watching these or anybody cares about what Eddie Page is doing now.
Your researching skills are called into question, Dan.
Well, I think that even the greatest researchers would have difficulty getting to the bottom of that mystery. So I went down that road and I realized that maybe it's not worth it. I can't make an episode out of Eddie Page's turn to Archangel Abaddon.
Right.
There's just, it's bad presentation. It's bad content. There's, he's not even saying like, I will destroy the world. Like, yeah. It's not even that kind of fun. So I'm like, well, maybe it's time to let go. Maybe it's time to
let go and let God.
Well, sure. I mean, anytime Mark Richards comes up, certainly we've got to cover that. That's pressing news.
Of course.
But maybe it's time to let go of some of these connections that we have with these other people. The guy with the telescope, right. Eddie Page.
Right.
Stephen Kelly. Certainly not going to cover him again. He is way too scary and creepy. Yeah.
There are toxic presences that sometimes you just need to get out of your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, no matter how much you love them, you got to let them go.
I decided maybe it's time for us to try and find new friends in the Project Camelot world.
All right.
And so I found one episode that was titled Deceit and Human Society. And I thought, hello, this is something I'm interested in. I love deceit and human society. I like both of those things.
I only like one of those.
Well, I like to study deceit.
Okay.
And I like human society.
I just like deceit. I'm not a huge fan of human society.
You're going the other way with it. So I decided that was going to be what we're going to look into, and we'll see what happens. But before we get to that, we got to give a shout out to some people who have signed up and are supporting this here show and make it possible. So first, Thomas, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Tommy. Thomas. Next, Luke, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks for joining the Lukes. We got a lot of Lukes these
strong
days.
Strong Luke faction.
Yeah, we got a strong Luke faction.
Next, Robin. Not Robin. R-H-A-B-A-N. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Robin.
Next, Lionel. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you,
Lionel.
There's only three Lionels.
There's only three?
Yeah, Lionel, so you can't do the Lionel, last one.
Lionel.
They have to stop.
Yep.
Then finally, I'd like to give a shout out to some people who have signed up on an elevated level, and we appreciate it very much. So first, we got Kelsey. Thank you so much for joining up and supporting the show.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Next, someone who I believe I pronounced Taconius when I gave them an initial shout out, but I looked closer. There's no spaces, but it's clearly taco in anus.
Oh, yeah. So the Taconius, I think I prefer. Yeah. I prefer Taconius.
I suspect it's a taco in the butthole. next, Eric W., thank you so much. And then finally, Leanne McAdoo is an anagram of Am Neocon Deal.
I didn't know that.
Yes, apparently.
Thank you.
So thank you all. You are now technocrats.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kelsey, Eric, Taco and Anus.
And Taconius.
Leanne McAdoo is an anagram of Am Neocon Deal.
Thank you for all anagrams everywhere.
We appreciate
thank you
it.
To all of you.
If you'd like to support the show and what we do, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button to support the show. We would appreciate it.
It really would be great.
So today's episode involves a lady by the name of Emily Windsor Craig, C-R-A-G-G.
Anytime you got the full three names, we're talking assassination or somebody who is to be looked out for.
This is going to be fairly interesting, and I think I don't know for sure if I want to say that we've found a new friend, but I've certainly learned a lot as we go along. I've learned that Carrie Cassidy is capable of what she expresses in this out of context drop.
So where are you getting this information, and why do you think it kind of means anything?
Ouch.
That's a damning question. That is not the question of somebody that you trust and believe in.
Ooh, so we're going to get there.
Oh boy. So, all this bullshit, where do you think it comes from, and why are you telling me?
I should also point out that this interview was, I believe, the last interview that Carrie posted before the 2016 election.
Okay.
It's on November 3rd, 2016.
Oh, no.
And also, this is the second time that she's interviewed Emily Windsor Craig.
Okay.
So, she is saying that to someone she invited back on her show.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, here is Carrie giving an introduction in the way that only she can.
Hi, everyone. This is Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot.
Hi, Carrie.
And tonight we have a very interesting guest. I've actually interviewed her in the past. Her name is Emily Windsor Craig. And she is, a fascinating woman. And she has a great deal to share with us today about some investigations she's been doing into our ancient history.
So this is about deceit and human society.
Hmm. Mm.
I do agree. She's pretty fascinating. So in terms of more of a bio, here is Carrie laying out some of the important facts of her guest's history.
She had her own software startup in the early 90s called Play Technologies, Inc., which failed to gain funding. I know what that's like. She was radicalized during the Clinton administration by the university's focus on globalism and the effects life of HR practices, gaslighting by corporations.
Right, fair.
And she wrote a small political theory newsletter when she lived on Capitol Hill called Just Now. She was redlisted in 1998 and spent the next 7 years running from gang stalkers.
Also not a good sign.
Gang stalkers.
Yeah.
She was redlisted in 88. She wasn't radicalized until the Clinton years.
Oh, that's a good point.
So we got a full 4 years where she's just gang.
She was getting gang stalked, but not radicalized yet.
Right.
Just on the run from gang stalkers.
Okay. Hmm. She was too busy running to get radicalized.
I suppose, except for maybe a couple years into the Clinton years, which overlap with the running from gang stalker years.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So she's been doing some research, and she gets here into – this is where Emily jumps in, and she expresses what her goal is of this research that she's doing. I don't know if I like the title of this video being Deceit and Human Society, because I don't believe that that's at all what ends up being discussed.
Okay.
There's some deceit for
it's
sure.
It's just her lying about human society.
Yeah, I guess on that end, maybe. It's a stretch still, I think.
Oh, boy.
I have been kind of disturbed by the chaos between spiritual paths and ideologies, and my master's is in conflict analysis. So I decided to try to synthesize a single timeline out of all the books that I showed you in my bibliography. And so that's my life goal, is to explain life to myself and to make sense of where we are politically and spiritually and physically, and, you know, I want it just understand it all, put it all together.
When you hear something like that, that sounds fine.
She wants a grand unified field theory. Great.
Now, the only thing is that this is a Project Camelot interview.
Yeah, that's
so true. So you have to really ask the question when she's saying all these books that I've read, I want to bring them all together. What the fuck books are you talking about?
Right.
Because that is a very important question.
Of course.
You could be talking about real books, or you could be talking about the goddamn Necronomicon.
I would actually argue that you are almost certainly talking about the goddamn Necronomicon if you're on Project Camelot.
I think there's a much higher likelihood that you're talking about books that aren't real.
Yeah.
They might be imaginary books.
It is usually tough to create a grand unified field theory out of imaginary books in this world, because they all contradict each other almost. On a constant basis.
It is tough. So as soon as she said that, I was like, okay, I need to know your books.
Yeah.
I need to know what you're trying to bring together if I am going to sign off on your mission. Because I might just ignore this.
Yes. Yeah, fair enough.
Thankfully, a couple minutes later, she does explain what books she's talking about.
The books that I have studied in depth, believe it or not, Ashiana Dean has done the only work that I have been able to find. I know you interviewed her at least once, and she's fascinating to listen to if you can keep hold, because she talks so fast. But her Voyager series are the beginning of the story of this planet, because the Bible doesn't go back that far. The Urantia book doesn't go back that far. None of the other books go back as far as she does. And so that's where the story begins, where according to her Voyager's account, and which makes sense to me.
Oh, no.
The first two seedings of life here on this life platform failed because of wars, because the indigenous populations, being peaceable and law-abiding and intelligent and having 12 strands of DNA and yada yada, They were no match
for the
predatory races that came here to get what they wanted.
Now, the predatory races coming to get what they wanted
there's a bunch of stuff where I'm already like, my red flags for you're about to be super racist have just raised all the way to the top.
It certainly has the feel of this being very,
we're about to get wild.
Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
You definitely get the sense that, like, some of this stuff could be very easily seen as codes.
Yeah.
Whether it's conscious or not.
Yeah.
So the books that she's using here are the Urantia book, which we covered in a past episode.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
The Bible, which is open to all sorts of interpretation. And I'm not positive about her interpretation of it based on something we learn later.
Doesn't even go back far enough. Why even add it?
But it's still in the mix.
Well, of course.
And then Ashiana Dean.
Who is Ashiana Dean?
We've heard Carrie bring her up all the fucking time. And it's just, it's the same thing. She talks about, Sean David Morton wrote some sci-fi book that she believes is actual truth.
Right.
It's the same thing. Ashiana Dean wrote these series of books called Voyager, and she believes, I don't know if they're actually science fiction. I think they are supposed to be, like, alternative history of the universe.
Right.
But
right,
Carrie believes that they are unveilings of truth.
They're supposed to be, she thinks it's creative nonfiction, if you will.
I don't know if she even would go that far. I think she'd just say straight nonfiction.
Straight nonfiction.
This is the fact.
This is a straight up history book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ashiana Dean is a New Age teacher, or as some have called her, a cult leader, whose real name is Anna Hayes. These books that she's written, Voyager series, Carrie believes are completely true and the best source of information about the secret history of mankind.
Of course.
I honestly wish it was more interesting than that, but it's not. From everything I can tell, Ashiana Dean seems like kind of a run-of-the-mill UFO cult leader. Like, there's promises of a return of these people that she calls the Guardian Alliance. Just never seems to come to pass. Like, predictions that they're coming. Money gets handed over. Nothing verifiable is ever said, and then nothing happens. The reason that these things are really dangerous, though, and need to be taken seriously, is that even though the vast majority of cases where someone has beliefs like this that they disseminate, vast majority of them, nothing happens. But sometimes something does. You need to look no further than Heaven's Gate to see how the framework of a UFO cult can be deadly in the hands of the wrong person. Anyone drawn to starting their own group like this is someone I consider to be very suspect. And that's not even because of anything that they're saying about aliens, or the varying degree of quality between different races.
Right. Sure,
which is
a whole
other conversation.
I just think
the impulse towards it is something that puts you in a category of, I'm going to keep my eye on you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like what you're up to.
Yeah. If anybody was like, man, I really want to start my own UFO cult, even if I agreed with everything they were saying, I'd be like, nah. You need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Since Ashiana Dean is clearly one of Carrie's main spiritual gurus, I really wanted to get my hands on a copy of her book so I could better understand what she preached. But these books are out of print and they are fucking expensive. And I can't find any PDFs.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think I've read enough books in that genre, though, because I used to read a lot of that, like Sitchin shit and
sure.
all that.
You know, sure, sure,
just
sure.
for
entertainment.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Anyway, I've read enough in the genre to know more or less what it's going to be like, which is to say that it'll be nearly incomprehensible bullshit.
Yeah.
From what I've been able to tell of Dean's writings online, because I have read some breakdowns mm-hmm. and some excerpts, there seems like there's a big emphasis on genetics in her philosophy.
Huh.
Humans, as created by the good aliens, presumably mm-hmm. the Guardian Alliance, have 12 strands of DNA, whereas the Anunnaki are missing some of those strands, so they came to the Earth to steal our gold, which somehow helped them manifest in the third dimension. Now, in present day, the Anunnaki are trying to get involved in our gene pool in order to get this 12th strand of DNA and breed it out of our genes, which honestly kind of sounds a lot like space replacement anxiety.
Yeah.
Or kind of a poetic science fiction version of white genocide propaganda.
Yeah.
We know that Carrie believes that the Jews are Anunnaki, so, like, if she gets a lot of her info from Ashiana Dean, I wouldn't be too surprised if she kind of believes that, too.
Yeah.
I don't know that to be the case since I haven't read enough of her material, but, like, if Carrie is a huge disciple of Ashiana Dean, and that's one of her beliefs.
If it doesn't have Mako Shark Rampant, I don't want to read it.
Right.
That's my new philosophy on all books.
I think that's a fair philosophy. Anyway, Ashiana Dean's Voyager books are not a good source of history.
No.
I will leave it at that. And if that's some of the books that this Emily Windsor Craig is trying to bring together, I gotta say no thanks.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a Birth of a Nation.
It seems like a fruitless endeavor, but also, I don't know, I don't think it's fair to make that assumption, like, at this point.
Later in the episode, maybe.
But, like, I don't think that there's anything necessarily wrong with spending your time trying to unite, like, space philosophies.
No.
Like, I think if you're not hurting anybody, whatever. It's only when it becomes damaging or is clearly reinforcing something negative that it becomes that I even care to.
Right.
Or when it rises to the level of being really interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
And so far.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not sure we've reached that qualification.
Gotcha.
But we might in this next clip.
The reason that I can look into this is not only because of the books, but personally, I'm a soul incarnate of one of the Anunnaki bloodlines. And so I have telepathic contact with that bloodline. Not that everybody in that bloodline agrees together or with me, but I'm part of the bloodline of King Nannar, N-A-A-N-A-A-R, who was the Anunnaki king who died in late 2012. Okay, so I have access to their stuff.
She got access to their stuff.
First off, R.I.P. King Nannar.
King of the elephants.
Oh, God.
King Nannar died in 2012. That's pretty recent.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I was like, really? We're doing that, huh? Like, it's a couple weeks ago, and now we're...
That's insane.
That's almost like one of her sources. That's like one of the people who's like, oh, yeah, my source was this guy in the CIA. Too bad he died a few years ago. Otherwise, you could confirm with him, but he's dead. And
it's like that scene in Mumford where, like, all of Mumford's, like, everyone he went to grad school with, they're all conveniently dead.
It's so strange that they're all dead. Yeah, it was a few years ago, too. You almost had him.
Yeah, could have talked to this Anunnaki king. Hey.
What was he
so anyway, of course she's royalty. She's Anunnaki royalty, which now is like, all right, I'm starting to get interested now.
All right, but let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the new king?
Well, I don't know, she says.
It seems like that has to be mentioned because she has a telepathic connection with the bloodlines. Of course she's going to stay in contact with the king.
I'm positive that she knows.
Okay, all right.
It might be her. I mean, she's in the royal bloodline.
That's true.
You know, she's an incarnate of the Anunnaki bloodline that is the king's lineage.
Mm.
She could legitimately be the king of the queen of the Anunnaki.
Or at least she's in the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I am really uncomfortable now when anybody says bloodline about anything.
You should be.
I'm like, nope, evil.
So the Anunnaki king died in 2012, but that's not the only recent Anunnaki news. You might be surprised to hear
that. Did John Oliver do a segment on the Anunnaki recently?
I think he missed this headline.
Ah, bummer.
But there was some big news back in 2007.
Okay.
And Emily cracked the fucking case on this one.
All right.
Now, in 2007, in Iran, an Anunnaki royal was dug up who was in stasis. And I don't know if you've seen his pictures online, a very extremely handsome guy who has apparently been revived. There were two other sarcophagi that were... collected when they found him. One had an elder gentleman who didn't make it, and the third one was not revealed who it was. And I believe, now I can't validate this or verify it, but I believe that Anunnaki was Nergal.
Of course it's Nergal. I was thinking Paul Newman, but I was way off.
We all should have seen that coming.
Obviously.
So in 2007, they dug up some Anunnaki that were in stasis.
Right.
And one of them was alive.
The elder gentleman, however,
didn't make it.
Poor guy.
R.I.P. Surprisingly, Carrie is not sold on this story.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let me slow you down 1 minute here. So you think that an Anunnaki sarcophagi, as you're calling them, I think.
Sarcophagi.
You think they were revived? That's, I don't think that's common knowledge. Why was that a YouTube video you saw and you believed it?
Yeah, I've seen several references to that YouTube video.
A lot of references to that YouTube video.
Not a lot of references to her telepathic connection. Wouldn't she already?
She does
have known
talk
about
a little
it?
Bit about that. She's like connected to the wife of Dergal.
Okay. Cool.
So this is actually a really interesting story. So to get this out of is the it? Way up top, the Anunnaki sarcophagi that Emily is talking about here are not real.
Okay.
That was a hoax video, but circumstances surrounding that hoax are actually kind of fascinating. In 2008, excavators working on prepping for road construction in Kurdistan accidentally uncovered an Iron Age graveyard with more than 20 intact graves. This is a really cool discovery, and there were indications that there were all sorts of burial goods and plenty for researchers to learn from the graves. According to a report co-produced by Ghent University, quote, within a week, however, a hoax was created around this discovery that gained worldwide momentum through blogs and websites. Reports and press releases began mentioning the discovery of 6 corpses instead of 5, and they became a mummified king and 5 of his bodyguards. The media frenzy was supported by a 36-second video fragment that was placed on YouTube and various other sites. It is the orchestrated discovery of a bearded mummified king with a crown, a gem-encrusted gold box, and 2 gems and encrusted gold plates with cuneiform inscriptions. The forgery was so crude that no professional archaeologist could ever be fooled by it, but many others were, and unfortunately such Indiana Jones-style stories are still persistent and keep circulating on the web. We hope this preliminary report may, for once and all, put an end to the speculations and conspiracy stories related to this hoax. That paper came out in 2012, and best as I can tell, it did not end the speculation.
They did kill King Nannar, though.
Oh, Nannar.
That was what killed him.
Oh,
it was that paper.
This sort of thing happens a lot. A large section of the space weirdo community, particularly those at the top of the pyramid, are scammers who know that nothing is ever going to prove what their arguments say are true. So the best they can do is piggyback any real archaeological discovery and try and co-opt it into their world. This behavior manifests in a dozen different ways. You see it here with this hoax mummy video attempting to co-opt this graveyard that was found in Iran.
Yeah.
You see it with the insistence that there's a cover-up, like when mainline archaeologists won't admit there was an Anunnaki in that tomb. They use that as proof that there was.
Right.
The same sort of thinking is what's behind Kerry arguing that things like ISIS was created so that the New World Order can go around and destroy monuments in the Middle East, these monuments that prove that humanity has deep relationships with aliens. It's all about co-opting reality in such a way as to deceptively elevate your ideas and give masking to why you can't prove any of the things you say.
Right. It's a good grift because you don't even have to work that hard.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It is. It is. The archaeologists are doing the work,
yeah,
or the
exactly.
people who are trying to build a road in Kurdistan.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the ones who accidentally uncover this, and then the real archaeologists do the hard work, and then you fake a little video and pretend that it's related
yeah,
to this.
It's almost like your job is just sitting and waiting around for somebody else to do stuff, and then you lie about it.
And
you make a living off of that? That's a good grift.
You morph bullshit.
Yeah.
So anyway, here's Emily talking more about this video.
Sure.
Okay, now who
the Anunnaki gentleman on YouTube in several videos, and they do not show him conscious. They show him just lying in the sarcophagus, but somebody pinches him and his flesh is very fresh, and he has hair on his chest.
And he's like, hey, quit.
Beautiful red beard. Oh, he's handsome as all get out.
Oh, God.
Okay, so we're in Iran.
Right.
And the guy has a beautiful red beard.
Well, he's Anunnaki.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
But he's Anunnaki.
Cool. Love it.
This is just, like, a really good encapsulation of how little proof, like, people in this world require to believe something. Like, this is... I've seen screenshots of this video. I didn't watch the video because I don't really care.
Yeah.
But I saw screenshots of it, and it is next level clunky.
Hackery.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing that it's like Carrie's video or picture that she showed of Anunnaki leading human prisoners.
Yeah.
You look at that, you're like,
really?
Get bent.
Get out of here.
No.
Yeah.
So, Emily starts talking about the Emerald Tablet of Thoth, which is something that's really big.
I don't even want to pronounce that.
It's complicated.
Okay. I like the added, like, whoa, this isn't the golden tablets, like, in my, this isn't the other tablets. This one's emerald.
Right.
You know we're doing something original because the tablet's a different color.
It's a very big piece in this space community. Like, it's a big piece of a lot of the stories that go around.
Okay.
It's a foundational document of some sort. I'm not sure it exists.
It's way better for everybody if it doesn't.
So anyway, she starts talking about Thoth, and she's saying some stuff that's a little bit weird.
Okay.
And Carrie...
Just now?
To the point that Carrie is even like, hold on now.
You are saying some things that are different than, let's say, the Zachariah Sitchin material and some other people. I can't forget the investigator's name offhand that I interviewed, but there's another guy who does, and he's got a whole nother group of people that he sort of identifies. So it does get quite confusing, but continue.
It gets confusing.
Just to clarify that for the people.
I'm open to other resources, and if you want to turn me on to other resources that question what I'm doing, I love it.
Well, you're going to love this podcast.
Oh, boy. Let's turn you on to some other resources.
Right.
Like reality.
It's a good resource.
Yeah.
So this emerald tablet also, it somehow weaves into a treaty, an emerald treaty.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Jordan.
It's a dearth of imagination these people have.
This next clip, Jordan, is... Yeah. 2 minutes long.
Oh, boy.
It's one of the more confusing things I've heard.
All right. Let's find out.
This is where I really think it becomes like we go from I am in the royal bloodline of the Anunnaki, and they dug up a living Anunnaki in Iran based on a hoax video.
Yeah, that's just fun.
Sure. This is where it kind of gets real for me.
Okay.
Where there's actually like, I think she's talking about something.
Oh, no.
So around 500,000 BC,
ooh,
the Emerald Covenant Treaty that Ashanna Dean talks about was crafted after the Lyran Wars, because the Lyrans were very peaceable, law-abiding, trusting people. And when they were slammed by the Alpha Draconi, who are basically predatory, they were unprepared to deal with it. They just simply suffered annihilation. So the Emerald Covenant Treaty was written by the founders Elohim in order to protect the white races from predation.
Oh, God.
And that happened around 500,000 BC. And after that,
Wait one second here. Because you're making a distinction when you say white races. Why is that?
Why is that? Because the Alpha Draconi are reptilian races. And the treaty actually specifies four white races that are supposed to be protected from predators. This has turned out to be a very bad idea, because what it set up in the minds of the cultures in the galaxy is that white races are somehow more special than others. And the truth of the matter was, according to, where did I read this?
Okay, yeah, because yeah. I am not familiar with this distinction you're making, so I'm wondering where this is coming from.
I've talked to Ashanna Dean. She's the one who wrote it down.
Well, no, because there is the rainbow races, and there are so many races that are mixed in here, and the Emerald Covenant actually covers all the races, not just the white ones.
And that's the problem.
The reason this is really confusing is the best reading I can take of this is that she's trying to explain white supremacy based on a tens of thousands of year old emerald treaty.
Yeah.
I believe that that's what she's doing.
So here's what I'm getting from her admittedly brilliant explanation of what she's talking about.
Sure.
So white people were getting fucked up by reptiles.
Right.
Reptiles and white people were like, let's make this treaty and let's put it on Emerald because Emerald lasts forever. Everybody knows this.
Absolutely.
Every kiss begins with Emerald.
Mm-hmm.
And
Emerald.
Nice.
Bam.
when they got overrun. They got slammed also. I enjoyed that as the word. Like, they got slammed.
Like it's a lunch hour.
Oh, white people suck!
Oh, I was going with you're really busy at a restaurant.
Oh, I got you.
These reptiles just keep ordering steak.
People steak. And so then, because they made the treaty specifically with four races of white people. Four separate white races.
Apparently.
Then the galaxy was like, well, clearly, if the reptiles are making a treaty with white people specifically, that means white people are more special than the other non-white races.
Your guess is as good as mine.
That's what I think she's saying.
I don't think you're far off, probably, in terms of like laying out what she's saying, but I'm more interested in what's behind it.
Right.
Because
is she condemning the fact that the galaxy thinks white people are better, or
seems that way.
Yes.
It seems that she's saying that the unfortunate result of this is white supremacy.
Yes, that's what
now,
I think she's saying.
I would say that this is a way of reinforcing white supremacy.
Almost 100%.
Because when you make it the result of space treaties, you kind of make it so you can't really deal with the issues.
It's not white supremacy. It's not white people's fault. It's not white supremacists' fault. It's the galaxy's fault. Dan, you gotta let them off the hook.
Right. It's kind of the same thing as just like when you take away, real world cause and effect, real world, systems as being the roots of a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is enabling them to continue and perpetuate,
right,
because
right,
you'll never deal with it seriously. Or so even if she is saying that white supremacy is a negative consequence of these space treaties, it's still like it's as damaging as just saying like, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, if you're going to say that it's the consequence of space treaties, then you're saying that the way to solve white supremacy
is renegotiate
the Emerald Space Treaty.
You bet it is.
So I think we're going to get... I mean, why aren't we doing that right now, Dan?
We really should.
That could solve so many things.
She's Anunnaki royalty.
She's got to tell
about...
She
doing
should
it.
Be actually yeah. renegotiating.
You're
she
right.
Could solve
she's
this
negligent.
Problem now.
Instead, she's just complaining to Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I thought that was very confusing, and I'm not entirely sure what the deal is. But in this next clip, I think we get a more troubling... I don't like this clip.
Uh-oh.
In 208,000 BC, the Anunnaki did some genetic engineering on the white races to produce a race of white gold miners in South Africa. And this is Mike Tillinger's
book. Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay, I just don't know why you're emphasizing white.
Because
this is not clear.
The treaty emphasized it, and it becomes the predicament that we're in now.
So there's current day real world consequences from this tree. I just feel like whenever you're talking about white people in South Africa, I always...
You should stop. Well, they should redistribute 90% of the land.
I always feel like you're on sort of touchy ground.
Yeah.
And when you're saying that the Anunnaki created white people to be gold miners in South Africa... And if she's saying that this is part of the predicament that we're in now, does she mean the post-apartheid South Africa?
Mm-hmm.
Like what exactly? She doesn't really get into specifics about what the predicament we're in now. You'd presume it would be something to do with the issues surrounding whiteness, but she's not offering any kind of real critique on that level.
No.
I don't know.
And it seems like Carrie is less offended by the whole white thing and more like, if you're going to be racist on my show, you better back it up.
Sort of. And I think that she resents the implication that it's possible that Emily understands Ashiana Dean better than her.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the same thing with anybody who impugns Mark Richards.
Right,
you know,
right,
you
right,
get
right.
in trouble whenever you push back on or... claim sort of authority over her sources.
Right.
So I thought that was weird. Certainly
yeah,
the Emerald Treaty to protect white people.
It's got
to
be
Anunnaki created white people.
Obviously.
In South Africa.
Miners.
I feel like she's speaking in code. This next clip, this ain't code.
there was a problem in scripture. If you follow Jesus' teachings, you get in a lot of hot water. You know, he said, turn the other cheek, and he said, be peaceable, and so on. Well, he said you would be persecuted. Well, if everybody's law abiding, there's no persecution. So this is why the Roman Catholic Jesuit branch wrote or had written the Quran to provide a system of martyrdom so they could have martyrs and saints.
Please stop.
And they could validate and verify the teachings of Jesus that Christians would be persecuted. So that's why we have.
Okay. You know, okay. That's an interesting theory.
Is it?
But you know, where are you getting that the Jesuits had the Quran written? This is an interesting interpretation of Muhammad's life.
That's, I understand.
Do
that's
it?
Known history. That's known history.
Well, I certainly, can, that's not known history.
That and come up with that. That's,
okay, I can't, I mean, known history, like, that's a very vague term. We can't actually bander around because nothing right now is known, as you know, because everything, our history, our lies within lies.
Fair enough. Especially your history.
I want more people to shout from the rooftops that Islam is a false flag operation.
This is insane. Like, the two things that I think are particularly notable about that clip is the first is like it's embarrassing to see Carrie capable of this.
Yeah.
Because that means that she could always do this.
Yeah. Where are you getting this from is unacceptable to hear from Carrie.
Right, right. When everything's going her way and someone agrees with her, there's never any sort of like, let's discuss how we know these things.
No, in fact, it's always like, this is just known history.
Right. That's the other part of it.
Yeah.
That behavior, that sort of this, like, she makes an extravagant claim. The Jesuits wrote the Quran in order to create victimhood for Christians.
Right. False flag narrative.
Right. That, well, first, there's that. And then second, so she makes that claim, and then when asked about it, it's known history.
Yeah.
That is the same behavior that Alex Jones does when he says something really fucked up, and it's like, it's in the mainstream news.
Yep.
It's in the white papers.
Yep.
The appeal to some sort of vague authority of like, everyone knows.
You're dumb for even questioning it.
Right. It's a strategy that people who are bluffing use.
Yeah, that's like saying that Abraham...
Or not even bluffing. They just know that they believe like things that aren't defensible.
Yeah. If you're gonna question me on the fact that Islam is a false flag, you might as well question me on that Abraham Lincoln was an alien, and that's why he wore that tall hat to hide his fucking cone head.
We all know that.
Exactly.
It's known
history.
So when I listened to this episode, like I had this feeling of like, all right, she's saying some stuff that's pretty, you know, like weird. Like I am from Anunnaki royalty. And I was like, I don't know. Is this beating up on someone who just believes weird stuff? And then you get into this and it's like, I believe that Islam was created as a false flag against Christians.
Yep.
It's like, okay.
All right.
I don't care about your feelings anymore.
You graduated.
Yeah.
That puts you in an upper echelon.
You are quite literally expressing things that are invalidating of tons of people.
Uh-huh.
So Carrie wants to know where she's getting these ideas from because she's making a claim that's
right.
Like, this should end the interview, quite frankly. I'm surprised it goes on quite a bit longer, but it does. She wants to know where she's getting it from, and we find out it's YouTube, but also...
Because of course it is.
But also, she gives a specific citation.
So on YouTube, and you can Google it.
Okay, but, you know, you can appreciate there's going to be plenty of Muslims who are going to take issue with the notion that the Jesuits wrote or basically created Muhammad in some way or mind controlled him or something to do what he did. Is that your idea?
That is the history of Islam, as I understand it, from Dr. Bill Warner.
Okay. All right. This is somebody that you obviously believe. Okay. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. This is where the interview definitely should have ended.
Yeah.
Dr. Bill Warner. I don't think that she knows who that is.
Yeah. Let's find out.
Bill Warner is the pen name for a guy named Bill French. I have no idea if this is true, but I like to have fun. So I assume that after 9/11, he heard that we were going with Freedom Fries, and he was like, shit, I better get on the board with this program.
Yeah.
I'm Bill Warner now.
I was going to say, Bill French is actually a totally great name for publishing. It's your Bill, your first name is shorter, French, it fits, all that's great.
So Bill French is the founder of the Center for the Study of Political Islam, and he's been one of the main voices putting forth a narrative that Islam is largely a political system and not a religion.
Gotcha.
So many of the propaganda talking points about the spread of Sharia law trace back to him and his 2010 book, Sharia Law for Non-Muslims. The SPLC includes him in their category of anti-Muslim hardliners, which is a rare group to be in, along with the likes of Pamela Geller, David Horowitz, and Jihad Watch founder, and Alex Jones guest, Robert Spencer.
And I assume all of Fox News.
Bill has absolutely no education on the subjects of history or religious studies. He's a former physics professor who just had some half-cooked notions about Islam and decided to start spreading them. Because of his vague PhD designation, people take his shit a bit more seriously than they would if it were coming out of the mouth of some dum-dum on YouTube. And thus, here we are.
Yeah, he's a naturopath as well.
Yeah.
Why not?
Bill Warner is a seriously dangerous source of information. And to hear Emily say that this is where she crafted her "the Jesuits created Islam" narrative from is super fucked up. I found Emily's BitChute channel, which is, you know, like the off-brand YouTube where people go when they're kicked off YouTube.
Did not know that, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, BitChute's that sort of fucked up YouTube.
Gotcha.
She has a channel on there, and it's full of videos stoking fear of Muslims and immigrants.
Of course.
It's really important to recognize that however zany it is to hear someone insist that they're a living Anunnaki, and the, you know, there's a mummy that was dug up in Iran, all too often these sorts of beliefs and preoccupations accompany that. And the reason for that, I suspect, is that the world that Project Camelot exists in trains people to accept claims with completely non-existent thresholds for evidence. Does something resonate with you? Then it must be true. That's a fine system for picking a couch, but it's not good in terms of philosophies, history, concrete facts especially. Not good. Not good to use, does it resonate? Does it feel true?
Yeah. We do seem to be in a bit of a war over whether or not objective reality exists at all with so many of these people.
Yeah, the problem is that, like, you know, even within an objective reality, there's still room for subjective experience and things that are subjectively true to you and not to me.
Exactly.
And that's what makes a conversation so much more difficult. It's whenever you become an absolutist about either, you run into real trouble. And I do think that's a problem.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that I really want to distinguish here is, like, this woman is, you know, she's presenting these kind of fun things, and then also, this is not fun.
Yeah, believing
it's a deeply Islamophobic belief to
hold. Yeah, believing that the entire religion of Islam was created in order to antagonize Christians,
right,
as opposed to being its own thing,
mm-hmm,
is a deeply Islamophobic thing. And just because you have a fun way of getting there,
right,
doesn't change
space
the
treaties.
Yeah, exactly.
Space treaties and emerald tablets,
yeah,
and an Islamophobic former physics professor.
Yeah, and it's never like the Emerald Space Treaty was designed to make everybody feel good. Like, there's always a bullshit enemy at the end of it.
Crazy.
That you get to demonize.
It's crazy shit. So, in this next clip, we find out that Islam isn't the only religion that she has some issues with.
Okay.
It turns out Christianity, there's some problems there, too.
Oh!
Getting back to the life of Jesus and so on and so forth, Jesus was not actually hung on the cross. There's plenty of evidence that he was not.
It's known history.
The Gospel of Barnabas tells that story, and that's one of the books that the Council of Nicaea removed.
Right. Okay. So fair enough.
There are several sources to say that no, Jesus is not the one hung on the cross. It was Judas who was hung on the cross, and Jesus got away, and he lived
foil again
to found the Merovingian bloodline.
Oh God, no!
From which King Arthur arose. Okay, we know that that's part of the Merovingian bloodline from Jesus.
Yes,
who didn't die on the cross. We know that this is true.
Important point, King Arthur is not real.
Pretty sure he was real, Dan. Pretty sure he is related to Jesus.
Certainly not.
Figure
of myth.
Nope. Everybody knows that Jesus' bloodline.
Arthur was not a real person.
Isn't that also British Israelism?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that have to be considered a certain type of British Israelism?
You make a very interesting point.
Oh, no, we're not doing this again.
I don't know if we are.
Oh, God.
So they're speaking really non-specifically here in that last clip.
Yeah, and so, agreeing with each other.
So it's tough to know exactly what book they're talking about. She said the Gospel of Barnabas, but it's important that I walk you through some of the reasons why this might be confusing. So there are a number of books ascribed to Barnabas that are all not in the Bible.
Yeah.
There is the Epistle of Barnabas, which is dated back to around 70 to 132 CE. And then there's the Acts of Barnabas, which contains language that solidly places it as a 5th century text. Neither of these were considered canonical, and it's possible that the Epistle could have been considered by the Council of Nicaea, but the Acts of Barnabas postdates the Council, so it can't have been kicked out by the Council of Nicaea. The problem is that neither of these books contradict the crucifixion of Jesus. In fact, the Epistle of Barnabas, the one that would have been around when the Council of Nicaea was around, it validates and discusses Jesus' passion and martyrdom as a ritual of him being a scapegoat. However, there is another book of Barnabas, the Gospel of Barnabas, and I suspect that this is specifically the book that Carrie and Emily are discussing. The Gospel of Barnabas includes the belief that Jesus escaped crucifixion and that Judas was crucified in his place. The Gospel of Barnabas is definitely a book that is not in the Bible. But here's the thing. There's no way the Council of Nicaea could have kicked it out of the Bible.
It was written 50 years ago.
The Council of Nicaea took place in 325 CE. The earliest versions of the Gospel of Barnabas trace to the late 1500s. This is a very recent text when you're talking about biblical literature. The Gospel of Barnabas includes a lot of elements that contradict Christian doctrine, like that Jesus wasn't the Son of God, but he was just a prophet. Many of the areas where the text departs from Christian belief, it's in line with the Islamic understanding of Christianity. So many have suggested that the text was written as an attempt to combine the belief systems of the two religions, but that's really just a hypothesis. The world of extra-biblical literature is a seriously wide canon, and when you allow a time span of considered books to extend to the late 1500s, you could possibly and probably find just about any argument you want to make with any of those books. Like, there's so many books you could choose from.
Yeah.
With a book like the Gospel of Barnabas, it's really easy to get things mixed up. You want to make the argument that this book proves that Jesus wasn't crucified and that the Council of Nicaea covered that up, but it just doesn't make sense. You can make it make sense if you intentionally confuse people by combining the Gospel of Barnabas that makes the argument you want, but was written in the 1500s, with the Epistle of Barnabas, which existed in the correct time period, but doesn't make the argument you want. It's either evidence of insane levels of sloppiness in research or an intentional attempt to mislead people. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just foolishness or deceit.
Well, we are talking about deceit in human society, so I'm going to go with the former.
I don't know. I could easily see it just being like confirmation bias.
Yeah.
And just believing what you want to believe and willingly combining the two, or getting it from a bad source that is intentionally misleading
you.
Any of those things are possible, but whatever you're doing, you are disseminating deceit.
Yeah.
Because it isn't true.
No.
The Gospel of Barnabas was not kicked out by the Council of Nicaea. It was written in the 1500s.
Well, I mean, if you're already playing fast and loose with reality, I'm sure that you could be like, no, it wasn't written in the 1500s. It was rediscovered in the 1500s. If we've got an Epistle of Barnabas, there's probably a Gospel of Barnabas. You know, we have Paul wrote epistles all over the place, and he's got his own.
There are some indications that some people believe that some pieces of the Gospel of Barnabas do trace back to older texts.
Yeah.
But there's no consensus opinion about that or surviving examples of what it would be.
And
the
we don't have, like,
do
an
survive,
author.
Are the Epistle and the Acts of Barnabas that are from closer to that time period.
Yeah.
And neither of them fulfill the other requirements that they need, which is Jesus escaped crucifixion and Judas was crucified in his place. So they're just trying to make things more interesting, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, we get to present day politics now in this next clip.
I don't want to do that.
And
with
guess
her.
What? She sounds a lot like Alex.
God damn it.
The people no longer had any voice in what is going on. And that's one of the things I keep pointing out, is that globalists were seated into both U.S. parties, so that we have now had five presidents who were following the globalist line, and we, the people, couldn't do anything about it. because our voting system was, has been, manipulated.
Right.
So globalists are in all parties. The globalists have taken over the right and the left.
Yeah. Yep.
This view of politics is very, very similar to Alex's.
Don't even bother voting. Mm-hmm. It's annoying. It's unfair when they take a very real problem that everybody agrees is a very real problem.
Voter suppression.
And then create a unsolvable problem out of it.
It's almost like taking white supremacy and blaming it on an Emerald Treaty.
Sure seems like it, Dan. It sure seems like what you're really doing is justifying the status quo in whatever possible way you can and making it damn near impossible to change.
And dressing it up with just sort of extravagant escapism.
Yeah.
And I'm envious on some level. There's a part of me that's...
Right?
Like, if there were a way for me to engage in this without descending into, like, outright Islamophobia, denial of people's religious beliefs and identity and all that. Like, I wish I could do it, but it doesn't seem possible. So anyway, she believes that the globalists are all around us and they're dictating all this political, brouhaha that's going on. She also believes that the Rothschilds are up to no good.
Well, why not?
Which is also similar to Alex.
Everybody tosses the Rothschilds in there.
Although, she may have a conspiracy about the Rothschilds that is slightly different than what Alex believes.
Napoleon actually made the Rothschilds make Napoleon lose.
This is more current Rothschild behavior than the Waterloo.
Okay.
But this one's a little buck wild.
Now, I just found this week online the new constitution for the United States of North America, which is an Islamic state. Surprise, surprise. Where did that come from?
Good question.
And reading down to the signature line, it comes from a Rothschild who patched this constitution together according to his best understanding. Now, it has not been ratified by the 50 states. So it is not in effect. But again, this is a globalist trick behind the people's back to control.
So it's the globalists. The Rothschilds are globalists who have, I mean, the whole conception of this, just without some of the details, is very similar to Alex's beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely.
The North American Union shit, the new constitution. Mm-hmm. She just believes that the Rothschilds have written an actual new constitution and that it's an Islamic state.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't actually that far from Alex, because, I mean, you were saying that Obama was going to get a third term Nichols was yelling about it becoming a caliphate and becoming the king of the Muslims.
Uh-huh.
So it actually is a lot closer than it initially appears.
Yeah.
She phrases it is different, but it's very similar.
And yet it's somehow dumber. It's the same level of stupid beyond all reasoning, but somehow coming from her and the way she's putting it in the context of Emerald Treaties.
Yeah, it's because you know about the space
shit. Yeah.
But I also think it's because Alex is more careful not to be as overt with what he's talking about. And because of that, he allows himself to have the air of knowing something, as opposed to her being like, I saw it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, honey.
So Carrie is not super. You see, you might hear that typing. That's Carrie typing.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
As I heard that typing, I was like, Carrie is bored, or Carrie is looking up that bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's Googling it. I just wanted to make that clear because people might hear that and
think you were typing. Yeah.
And so here, Carrie has Googled, and I don't think she believes this Constitution thing. But it's interesting to see how she asks her about this this disbelief that she's feeling.
Okay, can I just stop you there? Because what you've just brought up, this so-called constitution written by a Rothschild. So where are you getting this information, and why do you think it kind of means anything?
And do you think it'll get 2/3?
I have given you my outline for today's interview, and that link to that constitution is on that outline.
I see, but for the purposes of the people listening, you just paraphrase where you're getting this information? In other words, finding a link on the internet is all very fine and good. Can you say why this so-called constitution sort of means anything to you? Why did it resonate?
It comes from the intention to set up a North American Union.
So,
God damn it.
So, but the thing is, like, she's asking, is like, you know, finding something online is all good and well.
Yeah, no.
But then the standard of evidence that she's asking for is, why does it resonate with you? That's not good. That's not gonna help us get anywhere. You're never gonna find any actual information about this fucking fake constitution. Why does this feel real to you? That's great in therapy. That's not good in a, presumably journalistic show about the secret space program.
Every time I've read a history book, I've always been like, well, this fact doesn't resonate with me, so I'm just gonna assume that's not true.
I'm worried that a lot more people do that than we think.
I really think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, perhaps.
Oh, God.
So we get off this topic because she's not really able to defend her resonance very well.
Oh, she's not?
It's not very interesting.
Surprise.
So apparently Emily is writing a new book, and it has to do with some desired education reforms. And it's in this clip that we learn something else about her that has been sort of lingering in the background for this episode.
This isn't good.
It's not great.
Is she going to say slavery is okay?
In education, I'm so glad you're asking me this. In education, we have to correct the BS, the wrong history that our children are being taught every day. We have to teach them to solve problems according to causes and effects, not according to what's the most popular notion. Okay, so that I'm going to propose that in secondary school, that a year be devoted to the differences in law between maritime admiralty, common law, and administrative law, much along the same lines as Anavon Reitz spoke to you the other day, except I want to do it at about 10th grade level. There needs to be a year talking about financing and thrift. Mm. There needs to be a year talking about the political process and how the precincts work, vote tax.
I like civics.
You know, just go through the steps with young people so that when you see people taking a survey on a video and asking, do you know where Thailand is, or what's the name of your state senator? The people answering the questions are not so clueless.
I don't think that like any of the three things that she said should take a year have to do with where Thailand is or who your local representative is. That's current affairs and geography.
Spending
and thrift.
You know,
and also,
crazy?
By the way, almost every high school district in America requires some civics.
Yeah.
Like, that's a prerequisite in almost every school district.
Absolutely.
So, or that might even be in junior high.
I would, and you know what? In all honesty, the more she's talking about the things that she would add to education, if they were out of her hands, they might not be a bad idea. Like, if people spent a year talking about crazy fucking sovereign citizens and why we should ignore them.
A year is too long.
Probably.
A year is too long. For any of those things.
Yeah.
Any of those topics, a whole year is too much.
Maybe a week.
What about the fucking, like, other things you need to learn? Now, here's what I want to say. Throw out the sovereign citizen year, because that's stupid. That, also, it is a nice, like, tip of the hat, like, oh, I'm a sovereign citizen also.
Yeah, I like that she popped that in there.
Love it.
I did like that.
I think that if you interpret spending and thrift to be economics, sure. Kids should learn more about economics.
Absolutely.
Balancing checkbooks.
100%.
It should be more required as opposed to an elective thing that people understand. Because
it is kind of wild that when you're 18, you're not, you have no information on how to survive.
Understanding some of that stuff is, and I don't know if maybe there are school districts that do a better job of having those classes in place.
Mine sure
it certainly wasn't my experience.
Nope.
And then civics, yeah, sure. I mean, we already do that in most schools, but, you know, expanding that and making it more complete of education, or more relevant.
Comprehensive, and I would say even, like, engaging.
Those two things are great ideas. Mm-hmm. They're not going to help you know where Thailand is.
No.
But those two things are great for things that kids could be taught. Sovereign citizen? Nope. Now,
teaching them about how to avoid sovereign citizens?
That is helpful.
Maybe.
Don't be a cop.
Don't be
That's a good way to don't be a cop
don't
or
a
lawyer, and you'll probably never run into sovereign
Definitely
citizens.
Don't be a judge.
I would say too that like there's a real diminishing in what she's talking about a lot of the classic educational topics. And I know that a lot of people kind of poo-poo on some of them, but like, you know, writing and reading is really important to be able to express your ideas.
Yeah.
And people also shit on math a lot, and like math isn't really all that helpful, but the process of math is helpful.
Mm.
The reason that it's such an important piece of like universal education is because it trains you to go through thinking processes.
Yeah.
In the same way a lot of science education does. Like the actual thing, like I'm never going to need to balance a chemical equation in the future.
Right.
But learning how to do it opens up the process of thinking and systems.
No.
And that is really important in terms of navigating the world.
It is to my great disappointment that I have to say this, but learning proofs in geometry, like when I was in geometry, I could do all of the math in my head and then I could come to the right answer. But being forced to actually write down step by step helped me a great deal in that just ability to organize your thoughts and how the logic moves.
Right.
And, I was such a dick in geometry.
If it's only worth it for that, it's still
it's absolutely worth it. Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of applications for it in the real world. And so when she's talking about this stuff, like this amending education in order to add sovereign citizen belief, it's like you're only going to be able to do that by diminishing other high school curricula.
Right.
He's like, well.
But that's also a good goal of theirs, is because the more you learn, the more, or the less likely you are to be one of them.
To be a sovereign citizen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Carrie at this point wants to know, like, how do you talk to the Anunnaki? Like, you talk to
good
them.
Question.
Right. So she gets into some of the details here. And I would say that this is a kind of part of, we kind of, there's no way around this. The interview gets a little bit sad. At this point. And it's at this point where I kind of thought, like, maybe we shouldn't cover this episode. Mm. And I think that there's an argument to be made that she will say a few things that show a deep humanity in her. And I don't want to make fun of any of this.
Right.
But at the same time, the other stuff that she's saying is too fucked up to not cover.
She just invalidated a billion people because she thinks that the
nation of Islam
is
Christians.
Yeah, exactly.
Along those lines, now, you believe that you're in contact to this day with a certain group of the Anunnaki, is that right?
King Nanon.
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally when something comes up.
Okay. What, when you say that, do you mean that you're getting downloads? How are you communicating?
They're mostly checking
on, what?
Because I'm part of their bloodline. They're checking to see that I'm not doing anything to either dishonor them or teach or say what their hierarchy doesn't want to get it put out. And basically what I've said here today was okay. Okay, that was okay with them. And yes, you've probably not heard it before. They check on me and to see what I'm doing, and I can ask them a question now and then, but they're not very forthcoming. Yahweh's a lot more forthcoming than they are.
Yahweh?
She talks to Yahweh.
She talks to Yahweh?
Yeah.
Yahweh's a lot more forthcoming?
Yeah.
He wasn't very forthcoming, if I recall.
Well, that's a misunderstanding of Yahweh, apparently. According to her, he's just kind of interested in the nuts and bolts of, like, keeping volcanoes at bay and stuff like that.
All right.
Yeah. You know,
I kind of like that perception of a god. He's just like, he's just...
She describes him as a techie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just sort of, he's not into the social stuff.
That's okay. God, Yahweh doesn't have a Facebook page.
No.
I get it, man.
So you already get a little bit of a sense of like, yeah, they come and check on me, and like, it's a weird conception of how you communicate with aliens. They just come around and I ask them stuff and they don't say anything. It's like, this is weird.
That is interesting.
But she doesn't, in this next clip we learned that she doesn't see them. She can just hear them.
Okay.
And I believe this next clip is where things get kind of sad.
You believe you're in contact with them, and are you seeing them in person, or are you just getting sort of mental pictures, or what?
I'm not clairvoyant at all. I'm only clairaudient.
All right.
So what I can hear, I can hear their alarm system when a meteor is about to hit somewhere. I get tones in my ear when that happens, different kinds of tones.
Yeah,
I
tinnitus.
Hear music, particularly songs that are specific to certain meanings, to certain messages.
You have a memory.
When, for instance, last night, I was awakened at 3:30 in the morning, and I don't know exactly who it was that I was communicating with in terms of my thoughts about what I was going to do here. But it was, the intention was very direct that what I said today to you was going to be guided.
Okay.
It was going to be guided. And so it has been guided.
So all of this stuff has been guided by the Anunnaki, but that means that the Anunnaki don't believe Islam is a real religion. The Anunnaki believe that they had an Anunnaki dug up in a hoax in 2007 in Iran.
Yep.
The
Anunnaki are pretty easy to trick, Dan.
I would say that if she's getting external, like, really wise information, you wouldn't perpetuate a hoax.
It is.
A grave hoax.
I respect, to some extent, somebody who can take tinnitus, a bad dream, and sentimentality, and turn them into an entire alien religion.
Right.
There's a little bit of, reaching for the stars there, so to speak.
Literally. There's an indication of how these things that are very normal human experiences can be twisted by exposure to ideas like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also amplify and probably allow you to take in information and integrate it into your worldview that you might not otherwise, like Islam is a fake religion created by the Jesuits.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's why exposure to these worlds, I believe, can be dangerous, even if wacky.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So in this next clip, we learn about her being incarnated Anunnaki.
I was wondering about that.
And also, we learn something at the end of this that I think could honestly be an episode to itself, but I'll just have to explain it to you.
Okay.
So are you aware of, like, the Neanderthal bloodline that you may be part of?
I'm saying bloodline.
No, I'm Anunnaki.
Okay, but, you know, they made human hybrids, right?
Yeah, I'm not a human hybrid.
You don't think you are?
I'm incarnate, one of them.
All right.
Okay. I'm I don't fit in human society at all. And that's just how it is. And their way of thinking makes sense to me. And I just fit in with them better. Yahweh and I have a very open relationship in terms of trading meaning and thoughts back and forth.
And Yahweh's still on Tinder.
I have a terrible time trying to talk to my children. Okay. And then, you know, I was, as Eresh Kigal, I was part of the royal line, the royal bloodline. And on Mars, I was part of the royal bloodline. And so now I'm one of three illegitimate daughters of the Duke of Windsor. I'm part of the royal bloodline.
Okay.
So,
All right.
That's a roller coaster.
All right.
I feel really sad for her on one level because what she's expressing is so deeply human. You know, like, she feels alienated from people around her. She has a hard time connecting with her children.
Well, I mean, literally alienated.
Well,
yeah,
that's what it's become.
Yeah.
The way to deal with those feelings and to cope with them is to create an entire worldview that's around, like, I'm communicating with aliens. They understand me. Their line of thinking is much more in line with mine because it is mine.
Right.
I have stamped onto these aliens.
Yeah.
Some sort of, like, an external identity as opposed to it just being, I have thoughts.
Yeah. And you can totally see how the sequence of events could unfold. She starts to believe things that, you know, she's on YouTube all the time. She's believing stuff that is wild out there. She's talking to her kids about it and they're like, that's absolutely not true. Please stop doing that. And then as they stop talking to her, because she starts to believe more and more crap, she's more isolated, so she starts believing more and more crap.
Yep.
This
is the story that you hear pretty regularly now, or at least from time to time, about people who get into QAnon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you see this this spiral of isolation that happens around these worlds, and I think some of that is fairly intentional.
Yeah.
Like, the people who are promoting these ideas don't want people to have a robust, healthy ecosystem of friends and relations, because they will check you.
Oh, no.
They will help you not fall into these traps.
Absolutely.
Generally. And
cults find vulnerable people,
exactly.
And then they make sure that you're isolated from your support group.
And it's a bummer. It is a real bummer, because on one level, I recognize that a lot of the stuff that she believes is probably in some way a result of her feeling these feelings, mm-hmm. and becoming more and more entrenched in this world that leads you down bad paths.
Absolutely.
I understand that, and I empathize with that, and I don't want to mock her for it, but I do think that there's a line.
Yeah.
I think there's a line, and I also think that it's weird that she now is the heir to the throne.
That does happen. That does happen. You know, sometimes you're not paying attention, and then all of a sudden you're the illegitimate daughter of the Duke of Windsor.
Right.
That happens.
She has...
It's not my fault.
According to her, she has porphyria, which proves that she's from the royal bloodline.
That makes sense.
It's not a one-to-one, certainly.
Right.
So Arishkigal is the line of, that's the wife of the Nanar. No, not Nanar. The alien that was found in Iran.
Yes. Yeah.
Wait,
that wasn't Nergal?
Might have been Nergal.
I don't remember all their names.
Arishkigal, I believe, is the wife of the Anunnaki who was found in Iran. It was part of the royal bloodline.
She is
connected to her in some way,
right.
And is therefore part of the royalty of the Anunnaki. She's somehow royalty on Mars,
sure.
And now she is one of the illegitimate children of Edward VIII,
right?
Which makes her the heir to the British throne.
Well, one of them.
Well, there are three.
Exactly. We don't know if she's the oldest.
No, she's not.
Oh, see, then there we go.
She's not.
She's not eligible yet.
I think that this whole thing about her, there's a lot of controversy surrounding her claim to the throne. I should
From
say.
What circles, Dan? From what circles? This is known history.
I should tell
this
you.
This is known history, Dan.
I should tell you, it's a little scandalous. So she.
Number 10 is trying to keep her out of the government entirely.
She has three, or there are three. She's one of three of these illegitimate children,
uh-huh.
of Edward VIII, and she brings up one of them in this next clip.
Okay.
The next
Princess
sister lives in Virginia. Her name is Peggy Ann Childers. She has a YouTube account. She has a lot to say on YouTube. She doesn't like me very much, and I leave her alone.
Okay.
We are half sisters.
All right.
Yeah, well, that's what royals do, is they spread the seed around. So that's what my dad did. That's what he thought was the important thing.
I don't know that they do.
They're tossing it around.
I am not positive that that is the case anymore. I believe that that would be a real threat.
It would be a lot of trouble.
It would be a real threat, first of all, to monarchical systems.
Mm.
Secondly, it would be a huge threat to the reason why royal families intermarry is the protection of property.
Yeah.
I really think that there would be a very serious issue with it. This would rock the foundations of...
I mean, just period. To discover the royal family, the monarchy, the symbol of mm-hmm. the United Kingdom... is just throwing it around?
And the rightful queen is somewhere here in the United States.
Or in Virginia.
Possibly.
So.
Possibly Emily. Now we know why she's Windsor Craig.
Right. That's interesting, because whenever she was introduced as Emily Windsor Craig, I was like, isn't it odd that she has a name of a royal in her?
I was hoping that would slide under the radar.
There it was.
Here till the end.
Yep.
So, or it could be Peggy Childers out in Virginia. So Peggy does have a YouTube account, and it's mostly full of videos about how she's the rightful heir to the throne. She's the new,
sure.
the Queen Victoria.
Sure.
The second, I believe.
Okay.
Apparently, according to her, FDR is a Jew and part of the Illuminati.
Well.
So he set out to destroy Peggy's father,
off
Edward
to a
VIII.
Good start.
Because
off
he
to
wouldn't
a good
play
start.
Ball with the Illuminati.
Obviously.
Edward apparently was replaced by a bunch of clones, doubles.
A bunch of clones.
I mean, not clones, definitely doubles.
Doubles.
Body doubles.
Okay.
And one of them married Wallace Sampson and abdicated the throne. And apparently another one was Emily's father. So Emily Windsor Craig thinks that she's the daughter of Edward VIII, but actually it was one of the clone doubles.
Okay, so Peggy, mm-hmm. though, is a legitimate daughter.
The real Edward
the
VIII.
The real daughter.
Married her mother, so she's the rightful
right.
heir to the throne
right.
of England.
Right.
Yes.
But her mother is not... Like, he didn't
her last
abdicate.
Her last name is O'Keefe. I'm
okay.
not sure what...
All right.
Her
mother was Georgia.
No, different O'Keefe. This is all convoluted.
Yes, this is convoluted.
A ton of her videos have to do with how Emily is a fraud and about how Emily had tried to contact her so the two of them could work together. I'd really hope this would be a more fun way to approach the situation. Like, we could listen to a bunch of her videos
yeah.
about this feud, about
it was
these
a rap beef.
Supposed
yeah.
heirs to the throne.
I'm all about it. We're talking the Black Prince versus, yeah, I'm waiting.
Yeah, but the more I looked into Peggy's channel, the more another picture came together. It wasn't a coincidence that she makes such a point out of the fact that she believes FDR is Jewish.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
There's a ton of subtly racist shit in her YouTube channel and tons of videos about how, like, white supremacist terrorism is the result of mind control.
Sure.
So it's really weird. They have another pretender to the throne
yeah.
in this Peggy... who is Peggy Childers, who's just vaguely mentioned on this episode. You go to her YouTube channel and you find very similar shit. You see anti-Semitism, you see defense of white supremacist terrorism, you see stuff like videos about Michelle Obama that include the words picking cotton in the title. I'm like,
ooh,
I'm not even going to click
nope,
on that.
No, thanks. No, thanks. I can just leave that out of my
yeah.
life. Nope. Pass.
So it's insane. You got these, and, after she brings up her claim to the throne here, Emily, Carrie wraps up the interview pretty quick after that. I don't think she's very interested in hearing this. So they wrap it up. And that's what our new friend, Emily
Jesus.
Windsor Craig,
man.
Has.
To all the anti-Semites, let it go, man.
Yeah.
Let it go. To paraphrase,
Frozen?
Let those people go.
Oh. So I want to say this. Ultimately, it may seem kind of weird for us to have done this episode, and there might be some people who think it's an exercise in making fun of someone who's, you know, in pain or struggling. You know, especially with her comments about the alienation that
mm-hmm.
she felt. You know,
yeah.
I definitely empathize, and I don't want it to feel like I'm beating up on her
mm-hmm.
or anything. I sat with these thoughts and I considered them and I decided that if I allow that excuse for Emily, I kind of have to allow it for everybody on
literally
Project
everybody.
She's lucid. She defends her positions, although very poorly. She has all of her mental faculties and she's clearly not in some sort of a real struggle.
Yeah.
Like I've seen in a number of cases with the episodes of Project Camelot that
right.
I just won't do. While we can maybe read from context clues that she's felt a serious alienation from people in her life, and that's led her to adopt some elements of a fantasy life that she feels more in line with, that doesn't make her off limits to me.
I spent 3 years isolating myself. I didn't have, I was out of my mind. I didn't suddenly start believing that a billion people were fucked over by the Jesuits.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start disseminating that information and trying to hurt people with
if
it.
If we made fun of the human aspects of what she's...
Yeah, if we were like, nah, you don't get to see your
right.
kids anymore, then
right.
yeah, fuck us.
That's
no, I'm
awful.
On. Yeah.
And would never behave that way. But the fact that she believes and perpetuates this stuff, you can't just allow it because she's having a human experience.
Uh-huh. No.
How many people in Turning Point USA adopted that worldview because they felt they didn't fit in on college campuses around the country?
Yep.
How many times have you heard the story of people falling in with dangerous groups because they offered them a sense of community which they felt they lacked? This is the story of so many cults.
For sure.
I believe that it's important to treat people who fall in with these ideologies with a great deal of empathy, and I still do have feelings of compassion towards Emily. However, I also believe that the world we see in front of us We can't allow compassion to entirely blind us to the reality that a lot of the time, people who enter ideologies because of motivations we can empathize with often end up becoming disseminators of the very same ideologies, which is a behavior that cannot be empathized with.
Mm-mm.
What tipped the scales for me was when I was looking to see if I could find Emily's books, to maybe come to understand her positions a little bit better. I couldn't find any PDFs or any real reviews of her books, but I did find her blog. What particularly caught my eye was a March 27th, 2015 post entitled, quote, "What is a Jew?"
No!
In the post, she argues that the Israelites went to Ireland after the invasion of the Southern Kingdom.
There it is.
And that's where the lineage traces down from. Conversely, she argues almost all people who believe themselves to be Jews are not Jews and, quote, do not have the gifts that God Yahweh gave to the seed of Abraham. She closes the post by saying, quote, "I'm sorry, but you don't know your history very well."
And that's why the Anunnaki had red hair.
Sure.
That's why there was a red beard there.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So she's espousing British Israelite beliefs.
Yep.
She's espousing Christian identity beliefs. Mm-hmm. She's perpetuating these things. And even if she got sucked into this stuff, I would never do an episode about her if she wasn't on Project Camelot. Like, I don't believe that she has a huge reach,
right?
Necessarily on her own. And I think it would probably be an exercise in punching down if we did an episode like, if I found her BitChute channel.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
But Project Camelot still has a much larger audience than us.
Uh-huh.
She's being featured as somebody who has something interesting to say about deceit in human society on that channel. She's
deceitful and hurting human society.
This is not the first time she's been on. She's someone who Harry had on, was like, let's have her back on.
Jesus.
So when a lot of these ideas that she's disseminating to a wider audience than we have are traceable back to the, like, Islamophobic zealots, Christian identity beliefs, bullshit that's intentionally, misleading about the Gospel of Barnabas, hoax videos about Iranian graves, it is still important that we talk about it.
Absolutely.
I think it's still very relevant to our worldview. And I don't know, maybe I'm being a little bit defensive because I do prioritize empathy towards people and not wanting to beat up on people who are, struggling.
Absolutely.
And if I believe that there was a larger mental illness that was driving her, then I probably would feel like we shouldn't do this episode.
Right.
But from what I've been able to tell, I think that she's just somebody who believes fucked up things, and whether or not pain in her life led her to believe those things, she is now trying to disseminate these beliefs. And she's being successful in it.
Yeah.
She's on a platform larger than ours, so it's fair game to me.
Yeah, she's absolutely fit to stand trial, so to speak. And I get it, like, the impulse to be empathetic overall is very good, but it has to be tempered by a, we can't let this shit go.
Totally.
You know? Like that kind of thing. So I understand your defensive position, absolutely.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying
to... But also, fuck her!
What I'm trying to express is I think that the overarching empathy is a guiding principle, and when I try and operate through that, it requires a lot of questioning if it's appropriate to, laugh at some of this stuff.
Right.
And I've gone through that process,
mm-hmm.
and I've decided that yes, in this case, it is okay. She posted on her fucking blog before she was a guest on Carrie's show.
Yeah.
What is a Jew?
Yeah.
So I don't feel too much qualm about that. But it is important to go through that process all the same. Because if you don't, it's too easy to fall on the wrong side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are some people who may think that we still fell on the wrong side of it. And I respect their opinion, but I disagree.
I can't imagine that the end goal of empathy is inaction.
True.
That doesn't make any sense to me. The idea that we have, that being empathetic means allowing this shit to go unchecked.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
We can't be ignored just because we understand where you're coming from. I understand where tons of people are coming from. You know, you go back to a serial, he was abused when he was a child. a lot of people were abused when they were children, but they didn't grow up to murder a shit ton of people, you know?
Yeah, there's, yeah.
It can't be.
And to put another layer on that, like the thing that's human, and I'm not making fun of about her, is her feelings of alienation from other people that led her to decide that she is talking to aliens.
Right.
Who agree with her and think more like her.
Strange how they always
not,
agree.
But yeah. I would not make fun of that. If this was just an episode where she was talking about feeling a great disconnect and, you know, that she now has a bunch of aliens that she's in communication with, I wouldn't think that that was appropriate to talk about. It's where it extends into really dangerous ideas that have real-world consequences.
Absolutely.
Because I did find her BitChute channel, and it's full of agitation towards Muslims and immigrants and reinforcement of that worldview.
Yeah.
So the way it manifests is a very, I mean, there's no other way to put it, in line with the world we talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So It what it is like there is a version of what she's talking about that I would never make fun of. But unfortunately, this is a version that puts itself into what I consider fair game.
Yeah, no, fuck her.
Wash my hands. I wash my hands of it. So anyway, we'll be back. But for now, we have a website.
We do have a website. It is knowledgefight.com. You know how you spell knowledge?
How?
K-N-O... AnunnakiFight.com.
That's right. We're also on Anunnaki Book. We're on Facebook and Twitter.
We're on Twitter at Knowledge_Fight and at GoToBedJordan.
That is correct.
Indeed. Also, if you wanted to download our show, you could go to iTunes. You can leave a review there. You could also go to other podcast apps and leave a review there. There are many cats who carry a you've heard of toxic plasmosis, I believe?
I have.
Is that what it is? Toxoplasmosis. Well, that also comes with an episode of our show. So if you're feeling
if you have a baby, put it around a litter box and you'll get our podcast. Don't do that. So as we wrap this up, I would say that Durgal.
Durgal, how dare you? Ereshkigal
has never killed anybody. But one guy who technically probably has is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.